This is Steve Coast, and we're sitting in somewhere near Phoenix, Arizona, Tempe.
Yes.
Tempe. And I'm sitting here with James Fee at a mapping party sponsored by CloudMade. I just thought it'd be good to chat.
Well, thanks.
So, who is James Fee?
Well, I've been a GIS professional. I've been doing GIS for about 15 years now. Started doing a lot of environmental GIS, and probably in the last 5 years I've gotten more into master planning, transportation projects. And we've been, watching OpenStreetMap with, I guess, great interest because we've just been running into licensing issues with existing products. And, you know, as you always say, with maps, they get out of date real quick and don't exist. And where, you know, there's really no way to fix them. You know, people say, hey, why is that road not built? And you can't call up Google and tell them, you know, because it's 5 or 6 years before sometimes the stuff gets fixed. So that's been really where we've been looking forward to that and why we're really interested in the project.
So you're based here in Phoenix?
Yeah, we're really in Tempe, Arizona, right next to Arizona State University.
Okay. And what do you guys do?
I work for an architecture firm that does commercial architecture. But specifically, I do support of the master planning that the architecture firm does. And then we also try and help our clients, GIS clients, visualize their information on the internet. So they're either they have a problem they're trying to solve and figure out what's the best way to visualize this and give the users of this information ways to interact with it.
So what do you think the GIS industry thinks about OpenStreetMap?
I think initially they had probably a pretty negative view upon it. I think the idea that you just have a bunch of non-technical people moving around and editing points is really scary. I think in the United States, the survey industry really is really big. You know, you have to have a surveyor sign off on maps all the time now, it seems, and there's a lot of state laws in that. So I think there's kind of an idea that if you're not an expert, and, you know, what's an expert, I guess, is debatable, but, you know, GIS or mapping or surveyors feel that they have training to do this, therefore they're the experts. But I think that's changed quite a bit as people have gotten in and started to really look at it, that the quality of these maps that people are producing are as high as anything we've ever seen. And they're being updated quickly. And the people that get involved are passionate about what they're doing. And I think there's a lot of that in GIS, that people do GIS because they're passionate about mapping or technology. And I think it's the same way with this project. So I think that's starting to make people feel a lot better.
Do you think there's still a big gap between GIS and OpenStreetMap?
I think the gaps are probably technical in nature, just from the idea. Well, you know, actually, no, maybe, because I know a lot of people are starting to download the shapefiles that CloudMade has on their website. So I think people are starting to look, you know, rather than say, hey, I'm going to go download the Tiger shapefiles for my town, I'll go to CloudMade and download the shapefiles there. And I think so. I think we're starting to see that a slow replace from Tiger as your base map to maybe OpenStreetMap. You know, I don't know if people are necessarily integrating it really into their workflows, but I think the idea of having a highly accurate background map is something that is really interesting to people.
Does this reflect the evolution of your personal opinion of OpenStreetMap, like from whenever you first came across it to
today?
Probably.
You know, I mean, the biggest problem I've had with, I guess, NeoGeography in general has been that there's really no metadata with a lot of it. If, you know, with my background in NEPA doing a lot of environmental, you need to have examples of, you know, where you got the data from, how accurate it is, all this other stuff. And there was a lot of, you know, early on there wasn't really much backup to a lot of this stuff. But now, you know, with people tagging a lot better and being able to access that information, you know, it's really, I think that's what's making it a little more acceptable in the community.
So what's your personal involvement with OpenStreetMap?
Personally, you know, I'm a map geek, so, you know, I enjoy making maps. And, you know, years ago I would take an aerial of Tempe and I'd be digitizing map, you know, streets on it because it was more accurate than the Tiger data. So from my own standpoint, I kind of like updating the maps myself because, you know, well, I guess it's not a problem anymore, but it was, Phoenix was, you know, growing so quickly that you couldn't navigate anywhere on Google Maps outside of the main core of the city because all the communities weren't in there. And now, you know, people were able to map their neighborhood fairly accurately. So you could see that, hey, I'm going to whatever street this is in, you know, the middle of nowhere, Arizona, that street would be there. Whereas if you did a search for it in Google or Google Maps, you know, the aerial would be not reflective of it, and two, the actual street data wasn't showing up. So that was kind of it. And personally, for me, I like, you know, I like the idea that my square mile block is as accurate as possible. So, you know, it's kind of neat to go down and map every Starbucks, every ATM, every bus stop, you know, around my neighborhood. And, you know, slowly branching out, and, you know, my southern Tempe is pretty accurate because I've been, you know, doing a little gnat's ass pointing and stuff like that. So it's been kind of fun.
So what do you think of this mapping party we're having?
I think it's great. It's good to see a bunch of people that, you know, aren't all GIS. They're not all Linux. They're not all, it's just, you know, everybody brings, I guess, a different concept of how a map should be and what they're interested in. As someone who's really interested in railroads and updating abandoned railroads. And, you know, that's a great, you know, thing to be doing in OpenStreetMap, that someone to go through and take the time to actually, you know, update this to make it accurate. Because a lot of that is from a master planning standpoint, knowing where abandoned railways are, as far as, you know, maybe there could be parks and trails done. So if someone's going to take the effort to go and do that, I think it's a great addition, you know, to the system. And just having everybody discuss about, you know, tagging and different ways to tag something. I mean, there's 100 ways to skin a cat, they always say. In the same way, there's 100 ways to tag something. And, you know, every time I have one of these parties, I learn a different or better, more efficient way of tagging something. So that's always kind of neat.
So where do you see OpenStreetMap in the future?
Well, you know, I think it's getting interesting because a lot of these areas are starting to be mapped out. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the community when they've completed the map, so to speak, and how they handle that. You know, I think it's really easy to look at a blank spot on a map and say, hey, I need to update that. But once the streets are mapped, you know, how do you go about improving that, making sure it's up to date? What other things need to be mapped? I think that's going to be the really interesting part of kind of the what's next to OpenStreetMap as soon as a lot of these communities are mapped. In the United States, I think it's key, you know, people first look at the map and they say, hey, it looks pretty accurate. But then they get down deep and they say, hey, this Tiger data really isn't that accurate. And I think that's going to be the big key in the United States, is getting in there and updating that Tiger data. So, you know, in the United States, it's probably a little bit different than maybe in Europe, where it's a little more more robust. You know, I think it's a tale of two continents. You know, in Europe, you're going to see, you know, what's going to happen after we've mapped completely the country. And in the United States, it's going to be, hell, how do we improve existing mapping but make it more up to date? And I guess seeing, you know, in the third world, down in Africa and, you know, the Brazil and other areas that are growing really quickly, to seeing how they're mapping and they're improving their systems. Because I think a lot of them really don't want to be involved with, you know, the proprietary mapping systems. They want to have, you know, a nice open system, and I think that's where the growth is going to be.
Do you suggest that, I mean, do you have any ideas how OpenStreetMap could get there, especially here in the U.S.?
You know, the U.S. is kind of tough, because I think we're so Google-centric. My mom moves point, you know, she does an address and she goes and edits the point and moves it down the street to its correct address. And so to her, that's improving the map. And, you know, I've talked with her about, well, you know, why don't you go in and update OpenStreetMap, because it's, you know, your data is actually benefiting humanity as opposed to benefiting Google. And I think there's still a lot of jump for a lot of people, that they just feel, you know, the Google map is the default map of the United States.
So there's both reach and then there's the tools.
Yeah, you know, the tools could use some use, or get some, you know, use. I mean, I think Potlatch is a pretty good editor, but it's still a little confusing. But I'm not sure how you can dumb something down enough, you know, maybe, and then make it kind of ruins the value of it, because a lot of the tagging is what makes OpenStreetMap so great. But, you know, I think these tools are going to become more easier to use, just from people, you know, hacking away at them. And I think at that point, you know, as the project becomes more popular in the newspapers and other, you start, because you already see, I mean, what, White House, right? You know, they were using OpenStreetMap, and I think that's, you know, that's probably exposing a lot of people to the system and seeing, and zooming down and saying, hey, wait a minute, my street's wrong, and then looking it up and seeing that you can actually edit it. So.
Yeah. So apart from OpenStreetMap, what else is on your radar?
Well, we're looking a lot at moving our GIS to, I guess the cliche is, to the cloud. You know, traditionally GIS happens behind closed doors, and, you know, someone says to somebody, can you have your guys do this for me? And I guess, you know, in the new economy, there just isn't that, you know, you can't afford to have those guys back there only doing one thing. So we're trying to figure out how to expose GIS to help people solve some problems. And these are specific problems. It's not exposing a full-blown GIS system to everybody. But, you know, if I need to figure out how to you know we're doing an example with people down in New Orleans, is they basically want to have people extract information out based on their neighborhood. And so basically running that sort of a GIS process, basically, this is the information I'm interested in. Go to the GIS database and extract just that neighborhood and give it to me in a format that I can consume, such as CSV. You know, we just think about everyone wants that shapefile or a KML. Well, most of the people don't. That doesn't mean anything to them. They want a CSV file. So, you know, trying to figure out how to get that information out there and allow people to do a clip or an intersection. You know, they don't know what that is, but they just know I want to get this information out and bring it forward and do it cheaper. You know, if we do it in the cloud in a service-based system, then they're not paying for Windows Server and Esri servers and the maintenance guy to go in and do it. If it's just, you know, kind of they're paying Amazon to do all this, it reduces their costs.
So does that mean something like GeoCommons?
Yeah, something like GeoCommons. You know, I think they're definitely getting towards that. You know, they're still, oh, we'll see, I guess, at where they've got anything new going on. But, you know, that's, I think they're kind of talking about that as well. You know, GeoCommons right now is really just load data and then make a map from it. But, you know, the next step is probably how do we run some rudimentary GIS editing on it. And I think that'll be really beneficial to a lot of companies because, you know, you spend a lot of money on this software. You know, all this GIS software is just so darn expensive. And a lot of people buy expensive software to solve one specific problem, maybe once a quarter. But because that problem is so critical, they have to do it. You have to pay that extra money. But if you could just say once a quarter I pay GeoCommons or someone like that $20 or $50 to run that one process, that's a huge amount of savings, and I could spend that money elsewhere.
That really speaks to the point of, you know, where do you see the GIS industry going as a whole? Where do you see Esri in a few years' time? Where do you see GeoCommons?
Well, you know, Esri's already talking about their ArcGIS Online, basically hosting maps created with ArcGIS. And I guess the next step would be hosting data as services. So upload your map, expose it as a service.
You know? Do you think that's going to work? Because it almost sounds like Microsoft trying to put Office online. It's like they still want to protect the Windows franchise.
For Esri, it's really hard. I think that's why they haven't. I mean, they probably technically they could do it, but they haven't done it because it's hard for them. As you say, they don't want to ruin the sales of their software. So that leaves an opening for companies such as GeoCommons or, you know, WeoGeo as well, who's also in the cloud, solving these problems. I know WeoGeo signed an agreement with Safe Software of FME to put FME in the cloud, and FME is really a spatial ETL tool, so extracting data, transforming it, and loading it, and that's pretty much a GIS system.
Well,
right there.
You know, I don't know about that, so I'm guessing it means I don't pay a seat license for FME anymore, I just pay per conversion.
I think it's both. I think you might pay, you know, saying I got five guys and they would need access all the time, or I would pay it per use. I think it depends. You know, obviously the licensing is different. It might be cheaper to license it for a year and pay them, you know, that, or actually on a use. But, you know, if I needed to run a clip on a couple of, you know, information, you know, here it is, to load the data up into the cloud and then do your work and then extra. But the hard part about the cloud is a lot of people have huge amounts of data, terabytes of data. How do you get that in the cloud to run cloud processing on it? So there's still issues with this that people need to, and I think that's why you see GeoCommons trying to get all that data in there, is because once the data's in there, then you can.
And of course, not just technical limitations, but also licensing limitations. Who should I trust with my terabytes of data, and under what license can they use it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right now, I think the big difference between GeoCommons and WeoGeo, I mean, they both kind of do the same thing, but WeoGeo has a marketplace attached to theirs, so that you can do something and sell it. And in fact, they have where you can do derivative work. So if you have a shapefile of a river and you're selling it for $5, and then I take that river, do something and have another output, if someone pays me $10 for my thing, I pay you $5 for your. So you kind of build a market around that. I think that's where you're going to see, because, you know, data free. There's a lot of free data out there, and that's really great, but there's a lot of analytical magic that people have that they're just not ready to give up free. And so there needs if there's a way for them to give away, I guess not give away, but do micropayments for their scripting, their all that analytical work, I think that benefits the community at large. You know, it's as opposed to saying, oh, you have to either pay me $40,000 to do this for you, or you have to buy $100,000 worth of software to do this. You know, the idea that you could expose this script, and someone couldn't see your script. It just says, here's my input. and then it does the magic, and out comes the output. Either pay him for it, $1, $5, whatever, or, you know, he says, no, I'm giving this for free, but you can't see what I want, and, you know, feel free to call me for consulting as well, which I think is kind of the open, more open way of doing it.
So if we take a look in the rearview mirror of your sort of 15 years of experience, what have been the sort of most interesting changes or highlights do you think that over that period? Wow.
I think it's funny. I would say probably the biggest thing has been Google Earth. And when it first came out, I was laughing at it. 3D globe. I mean, how's my mom going to use this? But lo and behold, you know, she's using it all the time. And I think that's exposed a lot of people to mapping.
I think you must have a very spatially aware mother.
She loves to look at where she was. You know, go back to where she was born, where she went to school. You know, I mean, she's not really doing anything with it other than navigating it. But she understands a concept of typing in a location, hitting enter, and then watching the map move. And if she sees a KML now, she knows what it is and clicking on it. And I think there's quite a bit. I think the younger generation, almost everybody has Google Earth on their desktops now. You know, that's something. I mean, I remember years ago, you'd be on the plane and someone said, what do? And you describe it and they'd be like, okay. And now, you know, you describe it and say, oh, kind of like Google Earth or Google Maps. Like, well, yeah, sort of. But, you know, at least they understand the concept of what's going on. But what's great about it is people are used to having, you know, whether it's Google Earth or Whirlwind or whatever the heck Esri has as their, you know, client, or these web clients such as OpenLayers or you know, Google Maps or Virtual Earth, that people are used to having these spatial visualization tools, and at least are comfortable working with, so that we're able to visualize data that maybe 10 years ago we were visualizing it tabular. You know, here's your spreadsheet view. And now we're presenting it with polygons and points and all lines and all this other stuff. And people are, you know, able to navigate it. I think that's been a huge shift. It seems like every news article we see now has a map, right? So many applications are spatial in nature. You know, that there's so much spatial data out there. And people are figuring out, well, how do I hook this all together and, you know, mash it up to give a different product? I think that's been really interesting.
What should I have asked you that I haven't?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I guess, you know, the one thing that we're looking at is how do I monetize personally, you know, the cloud made system? You know, how is that going to help me as a consultant? That's kind of the interesting thing for me, and that's why I'm really starting to pay attention. Is what does cloud made bring to this whole thing? Because I think a lot of people are nervous going to just OpenStreetMap as a product, but I think there's a comfort level for people, you know, and I think that's kind of the really interesting thing is what is CloudMade going to do for OpenStreetMap and allow it to get into more, I guess, enterprise situations where companies maybe are a little uneasy about leveraging, you know, a system that's really that open. But, you know, whereas CloudMate, as you said, you know, say, can step in and be that intermediary and be that, you know, when something's wrong, who do we call?
Yeah.
Kind of a deal. And I think that's the interesting story probably in the next year and seeing where that goes. That probably is really interesting to you too.
It's directly relevant and interesting to
Yeah.
me.
So, you know, I mean, that's been really the thing that I've been trying to figure out is how, you know, how is this going to change? Because right now people say, you know, what do you want as your back end? You want Google Maps? Do you want Virtual Earth? Or do you want Esri?
Yeah.
And now the thing is, or so do you want OpenStreetMap? But then you explain OpenStreetMap to a lot of organizations, like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But if you know, say, well, hey, well, there's a company building upon that. How does that make you feel? And I think the people I've talked to, they feel a little bit better about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, okay, so there's someone looking out for what this is and, you know, how I can use it. If I'm going to build my system upon it, there's something there, you know, as opposed to, I guess, going to the email list and complaining.
So it's a little bit like Wikipedia in the early days where people say, well, I don't know if it's going to work.
Absolutely. Know. It really is. And now people are saying, you know what, I think this OpenStreetMap thing is here to stay. How do I use it? I didn't go to school with Wikipedia, so I'm not really sure how kids are a lot. But, you know, you hear stories about, initially, it was you couldn't use Wikipedia at all. And now I think people are referencing Wikipedia in their projects at schools now. So there's been this huge shift there. And I think we're getting close to that with OpenStreetMap as being a really viable product, you know, as opposed to just saying, okay, we're going to do a map. Let's get the Google Maps out. You know, they're saying, hey, well, maybe we don't want to use Google Maps for so many reasons. And we have a system with OpenLayers and OpenStreetMap that is as good, if not better.
I did used to love it at conferences when people asked the inevitable questions about OpenStreetMap, like, is it complete? What if someone comes in and just deletes things and so on? And very quickly you can turn it around and just ask the audience, how many of you have read the Encyclopedia Britannica in the last, let's say, 3 years? Or Microsoft Encarta, which has now been shut down. And of course, nobody puts their hand up. And then you say, so how many of you used Wikipedia in the last sort of 72 hours? And a lot of people put their hands up.
Well, it's exactly. You know, I mean, you know, the graph you show, the exponential growth, you know, that I think that pretty much shows that. I don't know if I've seen one for Wikipedia, but I'm sure it's kind of the same, where it was slow and then all of a sudden it takes off. And, you know, it built upon itself that, you know, I see the project, I look at it, I tell two of my friends, they see, you know, and it just grows out that way, and it just keeps growing and growing. And, you know, I think that as it gets bigger and it gets more robust and people zoom into their, you know, I think the one biggest problem of OpenStreetMap historically was they type in their address, they go there, and it was either blank or it was completely wrong. And they said, well, this project's worthless. But it's like, what if you do with the same thing at Google Maps and you don't get anything? Okay, it's worthless, but you can't do anything about it. At least with OpenStreetMap, you know, when you explain to people, oh, go add the road yourself, add your street yourself. You know, it's just,
and then that data is available to everyone.
I think it's just getting people to click on that little edit tab at the top, you know, is key. And I think once people do that, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. I just showed him OpenStreetMap a couple of weeks ago. He was saying his wife was yelling at him because he was staying up late. Just he couldn't stop editing.
It is very addictive.
It is very addictive because you start and you just keep going. And, you know, one more street, you know. And, you know, well, maybe I'll digitize this building in. Or maybe I'll get the park in and the diamond. And then, oh, I know these are where the bus stops are. And it just built upon itself. And, you know, and then once that person tells the next friend, oh, you know, I was doing that. And you sit there, and, you know, the iPhones, I think, are, you know, is the big thing. We'll see what, you know, with iPhone 3, when you have the more exposed
operating systems. Bring your own maps.
Yeah, bring your own maps. Why can't I bring OpenStreetMap along? Because I sure as heck can't afford to bring one of the other ones.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I think that'll be really interesting.
So where can people read about James Free?
Well, I blog at http://www. spatiallyadjusted.com. If you do a Google search for James Fee GIS, I'm the number one result. So I pretty much blog about GIS and OpenStreetMap and other projects, anything spatial related.
How's the blog working out?
It's working out really good. You know, it started out as a cry for help, the PostGIS. And it's slowly, you know, gone off into a lot of stuff. I think a lot of blogs start out as a cry of help. And it's been really helpful for me growing because there's just so many smart people out there. You know, and it's really fun to see people commenting about things, and you know, I'm completely wrong about a lot of things, so it's always good for people to tell me I'm wrong because then I learn.
A blogger wrong?
I know, and people telling me I'm wrong, it's crazy, but it's, you know, it's been really fun, and you know, it's always good to meet people who've actually read the blog. It's kind of weird, but you know, I guess got to read something on the internet, right?
Absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.